Hello, and welcome to show number 2609 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program empowering the visually impaired with expert advice, personal stories, and the latest in technology and accessibility. I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
Quality is not a luxury. It's part of access. And I think about how often our blind audiences are put in the position of choosing, do you want more or do you want it better? As if that's the choice. And sighted people aren't put in that position. So what I've been doing is training performers to serve the story and not their ego.
And I'm sure many of us appreciate having quality audio descriptions.
Audio description brings performances to life for blind audiences by turning visuals into clear narration. We'll talk with Roy Samuelson about writing and performing descriptions that match on-screen action, carry the emotion of the scenes, and make the experience overall more enjoyable. He also teaches and advises other people on how to do audio description well, expanding the availability of good quality audio descriptions. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Roy Samuelson.
The tip of the week is when performing, when you've got words to say to someone else, to think about what your intention is behind those words.
Then he proceeded to show us what he meant with an example.
Can we do a living example right now with the three of us?
Sure.
Could you give me a neutral sentence just off the top of your head?
We like to hike around the mesa.
If I were to say, who likes to hike around the mesa? How would you answer me using those exact words? Who likes to hike around the mesa?
We like to hike around the mesa.
Do you like to run around the mesa?
We like to hike around the mesa.
Do you like to run around the block?
We like to hike around the mesa.
Gotcha. So simply by giving a question, you put different emphasis on three different words. Just by prompting, the context of answering a question can change the meaning of a sentence.
Then he extended the lesson.
I'd love to do one more if I'm not pushing my luck.
Go ahead.
Great. So that same sentence, we like to hike around the mesa. If I were to say to you, could you share that sentence with me with the intent to discover? What would that sound like?
I don't know.
Could I give you a prompt like, oh, if you started the sentence, we like to hike around the mesa by starting by saying, oh, what would that sound like?
Oh, we like to walk around the mesa.
Yeah. And if I were to say, could you say that same sentence, we like to hike around the mesa, as a threat to someone? Like if you were to think about, I'm going to threaten someone, like furrow your brows and point a finger and kind of put them in their place by using those words, we like to hike around the mesa, almost like you're defending yourself. What would that sound like?
We like to hike around the mesa.
Yeah, there's a little attitude in there. I could hear that little, there's a little bit of gravel and kind of protective defense. And then if you were to say to someone that you really care about deeply, that you love, and you were to say, I really like you a lot, like literally say the words, I really like you a lot, we like to hike around the mesa. What would that sound like?
I really like you a lot. We like to hike around the mesa.
So adding those extra words at the beginning, along with the intent, whether it's to discover by adding that word O to the beginning, or to threaten by physically pointing a finger at someone and saying, I'm going to put you in your place, or to love and to find that affection, we're able to change the intent of what that very sentence means. And then when you apply the other context of emphasizing certain words, but instead of focusing on emphasizing certain words, what we're doing is giving context to it. So you're using the same sentence to answer different questions. That's what we do.
We got a good lesson in audio description there, I think. You must be a good teacher. I'm impressed. Those were excellent examples.
I appreciate you indulging me. This was a lot of fun.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
The My Tools for Living retail store at the Chicago Lighthouse, offering tools and technologies to support everyday life across the vision loss spectrum, as well as ongoing advice. More information is available at mytoolsforliving.com.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
Let's start by meeting Roy.
Hi, it's Roy Samuelson, and I ensure that audio description is part of the story so blind audiences can stay immersed instead of pulled out.
And you are an audio describer and have been an audio describer for some time, I take it.
Yeah, I like to call myself an audio description performer as well as an audio description producer. And that term describer can get a little tricky because there's so many elements to how audio description is created for film and TV. So I spent over a decade performing and producing audio description for film and TV.
And you do mostly film and TV, not live productions?
Yeah, that's a really good distinction. The work that I do is primarily pre-recorded content.
Before we get into some of the details of how your art is done, tell us how you got into this field.
Oh, that's a great question. I started off as a voice actor, and there was an opportunity to audition for a film that was creating audio description. And I remember going into this, Pete, where it was so satisfying to see so many elements of what I do in voiceover in this one genre that I had never heard of. I didn't get any sleep that night. Because I was so excited of the experience. And that was probably about 10 or 12 years ago. And each time that I've gone in to record, either at my studio or at someone else's studio, there's something about what good AD feels like to listen to that I really like to light into.
And when you say AD, you mean audio description?
Yes, nice catch, because there's so many different meanings of AD, even in film and TV. There's the assistant director, or you think about advertisements AD. So I'm really glad you said that. Yeah, it's audio description.
Had you ever had any experience with blind people before you got into the field?
That's a great question. Oh my goodness, Nancy. I had some very limited experiences. But because of the work that I do, a lot of blind people have reached out and I've reached out, and we've developed some pretty strong friendships. And also around the same time that I started working in audio description, one of my dearest friends, a chosen family friend, we were so close and so connected. And he was a writer for television. And so he would always complain about all these things that are happening in a TV series. And it was so funny. And we really connected a lot. Towards the end of his life, he ended up losing all of his sight during some treatments. And what was so incredible about audio description in this context was I was able to be with him talking about a TV show without those gaps. That because audio description was giving him the access to the visuals, we could still have the same conversation about a TV show and all the great moments that happened where he would say, oh, did you see that part where such and such happened? Oh, I can't believe they did that. And there were no speed bumps in the conversation. And that is yet another form of access that I literally got to experience. That was really the driving force.
You've been doing this for some time now, and you're presumably quite skilled at it. But I'm curious how you developed the skills to do audio description in a quality way. What kind of training is involved or life experiences?
There's a combination of training and life experiences that with the work that I do in voiceover in general as a voiceover performer, there's all sorts of different things. And I won't get into the weeds, but it's basically bringing a script to life. And I feel very passionately about how there's so many different approaches to that. But with the intent of bringing the words to life for our audience that is participating in audio description, that means that that immersive experience is there in parity to sighted audiences. That if a sighted audience is gasping or laughing or crying or holding their heart in shock, if our blind audience isn't having that same experience, then the audio description isn't serving them. And that's a combination of the writing quality of the audio description, and it's also how that writing is brought to life. And that bringing to life is what I like to focus on.
And you presumably do your own writing and talking when you're creating audio description, right?
When I'm producing, I outsource both. So I like to hire blind professionals, both as writers and voice talents. We can go into some of that, but most of my experience has been performing scripts that have already been written for me. I have done writing for audio description, but my main focus has been bringing those scripts to life that are already written and why that matters. On the producing side, it does make a difference to be able to make sure that we're bringing the best writers and the best performers and the best engineers, the best people that can know when to place things and how that mix, how that turning the volume up and down is reduced as much as possible so that our blind audiences don't have to keep fiddling with the volume.
Yeah. So some people, like Pete's been blind all his life, and I usually do a very informal description when we're watching things together, and he wants it as terse as possible. But some people who are new to being blind want it as descriptive as possible. How do you strike a balance between those two extremes?
I love this question. We were just talking about this in the spectrum of blindness, that there are some people that regardless of being born blind or having progressive blindness like RP or even different kinds of blindness, that each person has their own quality wish of what that audio description can look like. Some people really care about the set and the design and the spectacle. Other people are really focused on the emotional expressions. Other people want to know the costumes. And other people, it sounds like Pete, is just like, give me the bare bones. And what I think is so fascinating about what is happening now in the industry is that those kinds of choices are just starting to peek out. In other words, I have a idealistic vision of someone turning on a TV show or a film and being able to choose from multiple different levels of audio description to be able to accommodate a more almost wall-to-wall describing as much as possible in between lines of dialogue to something that's a lot more reserved and just gives the bare bones, and that our audiences should be able to choose that. And I think the technology is allowing us to get there.
A number of years ago, we actually did a show interviewing some people in a museum and how accessible it was. And I thought it was interesting. They actually had two different audio descriptions that people could tune into. One was a very descriptive narration of what the picture was about. There's a woman carrying a yellow rose and in a pink dress and this kind of a hat and what's behind her and the smoke and all that. And then the other one was, this is a scene from an 18th century commercial coal town. You know, one gives you kind of the overall impression and one gives you a lot of details. And as you say, people like different descriptions depending on who they are and their background.
That's a great point. And thinking about museum, that freedom that museum has in two levels. First of all, being able to choose to have two different versions of audio description, but also the level of timing. That in pre-recorded media like film and TV, in most cases, we're limited to finding places to put the audio description in between lines of dialogue. And the old expression of a picture is worth 1,000 words, you take that to 24 frames per second of film, that's 24,000 words to choose from for every second. And it really helps me respect the writers who create the audio description, but also the freedom, like you said, with that museum to be able to have, you know, maybe a longer track to be able to really go into the detail for someone that wants that. And then for someone else, it's like, okay, I got what I needed. Let's move on.
Well, it's interesting, as you point out, I'm always amazed you guys so artfully insert your comments between the other dialogue and what's going on in the movie or whatever event you're watching. That's tricky.
I love that you said artfully. There is such a impact of the immersive experience that can happen when those decisions are made to make that art, that craft. And I think about how audio description is performed and produced, that we've got all sorts of choices that can be made. I like to talk about the context of what's happening right before or right after. I like to talk about intent, like what is the reason that this particular scene is being described and why. When a audio description sounds off, it breaks that immersion. Could I give an example? So you think about, let's say, a horror film where someone's running into the pit of hell away from a demon. And it's like, if you heard a voice that said, "He runs into the pit of hell, he dies." That's a very conversational tone. But there's something that's kind of funny about it, like maybe literally funny, but it's definitely off-putting. And in that same scene, if someone were to say, "He runs into the pit of hell, he dies," that there's a suspense that can come from that performance that wasn't there in the beginning. And it's the same words, but there's something else that's happening. And that something else, I believe, is where those choices that an audio description performer makes really makes a difference.
That's an interesting point you made. I was thinking as we started the interview that there's a difference between narrating an audiobook where the narrator tries to put their voice into the emotion of what's going on in the novel, whereas someone like yourself doing an audio description, it's a little bit more remote. You're the narrator, and you don't necessarily get into the voice of what's going on. But in the case you just gave, that's very important.
With audio description, we really are surfing the emotional intent of a scene. And within one scene, there could be five or six different intent that happens. And it's up to us to make sure that we are staying true to what is being presented in that scene. And that's part of the work, I believe, to be able to recognize the scene is kind of going dark and we want our audiences to be aware of it. And again, because of that limitation of time and concise words, it really does make a difference to be able not only to make sure that the words are there, but the intent behind how we say the words are there. And I like to call that surfing the emotion, that it's not less of a performance. It's a very nuanced performance. And it really does make a difference, the choices that the actors make.
Well, that example you gave about the poor guy entering the pit of hell, you know, it's really, I think, important, as you just demonstrated, that the audio description stay consistent with the emotion of what's going on.
When you say consistent with the emotion, I think that is the key.
So Nancy mentioned earlier how I often prefer more terse descriptions. Being blind all my life, I'm used to gathering a lot of information through my other senses and interpreting what I hear. So I rely a lot, for example, on the Foley mixer and the soundtrack in the background, portraying a lot of the emotion and the intent of what's going on in the scene. And I wonder, we talked about not stepping on the verbal part of the production. What do you think about stepping on some of those other pieces, the Foley mixing, the sound effects, the musical background and stuff? Is that a concern too?
Absolutely. And I think the way you phrased it is really good. If it is stepping on, then it's getting in the way. And our job is to get out of the way. I try my best when there's a song playing, if I have the space, which is pretty rare, to be able to jump in and out so that I'm in dance with the lyrics. It's hard to listen to two voices at the same time. And that kind of stepping on can really get in the way. So there's a lot of relativity. There's a lot of circumstance that can make a difference. But I think how you phrased it, Pete, that if something feels like it's stepping on, unless it's absolutely essential, that's probably something for the audio description to stay away from and allow the story to be told as it originally was without us adding anything.
The other thing I found in some audio descriptions is there may be a lot of loud music and dancing and stuff going on the screen or the stage that I'd really like to know what's happening, but how do you get over the loudness of that?
this is happening outside of audio description too, that a lot of people, depending on how their home stereo system is set up, or their home 5.1, or their home Dolby Atmos, or their headset, or they're watching on a phone, or, you know, the options of how the viewer, whether they're blind or sighted, receives the story can vary. And what's really interesting is that those choices of the engineer really make a difference. And if you're experiencing a really loud audio description during a very intimate moment, that's going to be jarring. And if it's turned down too low during a loud moment, that's going to be jarring too. When I talk to sound engineers, there's certain ways that they can allow the audio description to cut through without making everything the same. As tempting as it is to make everything the same volume level, that can create problems. But we're also within a realm of not too much and not too little. It's that sweet spot. Our work in audio description is that high wire act, whether it's the sound mix, whether it's the timing, whether it's the writing, whether it's the performance, or even the quality control, that all of these elements need to be really solid. And the weakest link in any of them is going to damage the experience.
So do you work in conjunction with the production managers, and they might duck certain parts of the audio in back of you to make your descriptions cut through?
That is one option. And if that is chosen deliberately and not leveled across the entire content, that can really work. And there's ways to duck that isn't just turning down the volume altogether.
You've been sounding during our conversation very sincere in your desire to make quality audio descriptions, but I understand that you've taken that to the next level, and you actually are involved in doing advocacy to make sure that a quality audio description experience is available to people who need it. Can you talk about that a little?
Quality is not a luxury. It's part of access. And I think about how often our blind audiences are put in the position of choosing, do you want more or do you want it better? As if that's the choice. And sighted people aren't put in that position. So what I've been doing is training performers to serve the story and not their ego. I recognized that this was the whole point of all storytelling, that it is the focus on the story. And us performers, when we serve the story, it makes a difference. And it's actually in alignment with storytelling in such a beautiful way. So I do advise teams on how the human voice and the choices that that human voice makes can really affect not only trust, but also enjoyment. And so my goal is to, like I said, to make sure that blind audiences get that same emotional experience that everyone else gets. That is yet a form of advocacy. And as I teach more voice actors to do this, whether they're blind or sighted, there's something about making sure that that baseline is where we start from and we can grow into, that we're not just checking the box and saying, okay, we did it, that's enough. But it's really, here's the baseline and here's how far we can take this.
So you do a fair amount of teaching and coaching and guiding. If somebody was interested in getting involved, how would they get started?
I have written a book called A Voice Actor's Guide to Audio Description Performance. And I have shared some experiences and also some quotes from blind audiences and blind professionals from my podcast within the book that talk about all sorts of aspects. And it's really written for all people. I've really done my best to make sure that that book illustrates not only audio description, but also some other applications beyond that. I started a membership that is allowing people to play with audio description scripts. And the idea is to create this really safe place to play and explore. And so this membership, the AD Playback Lounge, the Audio Description Playback Lounge, is a space for that exploration. And it's been fascinating to watch how voice actors of all kinds are growing, not only in audio description performance, but in other areas of voiceover too.
So if somebody wanted to listen to your podcast or read your book, where would they find those?
Thanks for asking. The book is at roysamuelson.com/book. And the audiobook has actual quotes from the podcast. It's available on Bard for blind audiences as the audio description, a voice actor's guide to audio description. And it's also available on Kindle, Audible, and Barnes & Noble and a few other places. It's all at roysamuelson.com/book. And then for the podcast, it's the ADNA Presents. The Audio Description Network Alliance presents, the ADNA presents, and we've got over 250 interviews with professionals of all kinds in audio description, and also some outside of audio description that relates to audio description, to hear how innovation is happening and how kind of peeling back behind the scenes to hear how different professionals are bringing this work to life.
And if people wanted to connect with you about training opportunities or just ask questions, is there a way they can do that?
Yeah. My email address, which I'm happy to share with you, is roy@roysamuelson.com. And I also come out with a weekly newsletter. And if you go to roysamuelson.kit.com, that's K-I-T in the middle, roysamuelson.kit.com. It's a free newsletter, and I always like to give some tips and tricks of the trade to let people know what's going on and also share any workshops that might be coming up.
Well, thank you so much. And I gather you've done audio description for some pretty well-known events. If somebody wants to listen to you doing that, can you recommend a couple of events that they can go back and listen to?
Oh, sure. Thank you for asking. I'm on a few different streaming services and feature films. The Marty Supreme came out last Christmas of 2025, and it's quite the adventure of a ping pong player, believe it or not. There's also a TV show called Poker Face, and that is a series kind of like Matlock back in the day, but it's tremendously satisfying and fun. Those two come to mind. And also, I'd love to share The Last of Us. What's notable about that TV series is that on the second season, we were able to advocate to make sure our blind quality control person was named in the credits. It's remarkable that HBO was amenable to that. We had worked a while to make sure that would happen. And so it's exciting to have Serena Gilbert celebrated for her work as quality control on that series.
As usual, if you missed anything in the audio, you can find it all in the show notes with the episode. And this episode is number 2609.
That's it for this week's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about yoga. Yoga can be accessible for everyone when taught with clear descriptions and flexible options. We'll talk with visually impaired yoga instructor Ali Slaughter about guiding gentle classes, adapting poses for different bodies and abilities, supporting students of all abilities, and building community through in-person or virtual yoga classes.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, available wherever you get your podcasts.
For show notes, resources, and more information, visit our website at eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for being part of our community. Until next time, I'm Peter Torpy.
And I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy. Thank you for listening.